And joining us today on Perspectives is Betty Boyd Caroli. She is the author of the book Lady Bird and Lyndon. Betty is the author of First Ladies, Martha Washington to Michelle Obama, Inside the White House, and The Roosevelt Women. A graduate of Oberlin College, Caroli holds a doctorate in American Civilization from New York University. She currently resides in New York City and Venice, Italy. Betty, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Well, thanks for talking with me.
Now, as I mentioned, you are the author of a couple of other books that also involve the presidency. Tell us a little bit about, first of all, when you were younger, have you always been interested in American history or history in general?
I have to say that I wasn't a very good history student in high school. And in college, I majored in political science. I really got interested in American history when I went to live in Italy. As a young person, I was attending university also there, and I realized that the United States is so different in so many ways from Italy. That's a terrible way to get, I suppose, interested in American history. But it was really living outside the country that made me want to study American civilization, which is really the very basic ideas of what makes America different from other countries, right? And so I came back from Italy and did the PhD in American Studies, American Civilization, they called it, at NYU. So I came to history late, I guess I would have to say.
And as far as your writing, did you write as a little girl? Did you keep a diary, a journal, anything
well,
like that?
I don't remember. I did have a little diary, but it was more just a list, I think, of what I did. But I was always interested in writing, and I always wanted to do that. And, in fact, in high school, I wrote a column for the local newspaper, small-town newspaper in Ohio, called A. Freddy, because the town was Fredericktown, Ohio. And I was just reminded recently that I got my first fan letter then. Actually, a woman reader who was a fairly well-known poet in the state wrote in to say that she thought A. Freddy would have a great future as a writer, but she assumed it was a male because she said, "I believe he will have a great future as a writer." So it's sort of funny to look back on that, my first fan letter.
We are visiting with Betty Boyd Caroli. Caroli, she is the author of Lady Bird and Lyndon, The Hidden Story of a Marriage That Made a President. And this is an interesting book, interesting and also... Gosh, the word escapes me. It'll come back to me. But I was captivated by this. I'm also a big fan of American history and the presidency as well. But this book, I think a lot of times some people overlook the first ladies. And in your book, as you mentioned, Lady Bird Johnson was, in a way, living in the shadow of Jackie Kennedy, because that's a horrible way to come in and become first lady, the way she did.
Well, that's certainly true. Lady Bird said in 1963, November of 63, she said it was like being on stage for a part that she never rehearsed. And certainly to follow the icon of Jackie Kennedy, you know, she was so popular. She was popular around the world. There were magazines named Jackie in, I think, Poland and South America. So she was a world figure following her. And also the whole tragedy of the assassination. To come into that, to the White House that way, was a terrible way to come in. But I would point out that no woman ever came into the job better equipped for it than Lady Bird Johnson. She'd lived in Washington for part of every year for 30 years, almost 30 years. So she knew reporters by first name. She had a great network of powerful people. You know, she knew the wives of congressmen, the wives of senators, because she had been active in those organizations of those spouses of members of Congress. So they all pitched in to help. There's a great picture of her supervising a dozen of them or so who came to her home, because it took a while before the Johnsons moved into the White House. Women came from the congressional wives and the Senate wives to help Lady Bird answer the thousands of condolence letters that came in. She was an efficient manager. She hired a very efficient staff. So no one really came into the job better equipped than she did.
And one of the things that you point out in the book, and again, it's very interesting to look back on that, because very few people have done that, and that's the childhood of both the president and Lady Bird, that you go in and tell us a little bit about their grandfathers, their fathers, and very different lives and backgrounds as far as Lyndon and Lady Bird.
Yes, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to write about Lady Bird was that, and when I did the book about all first ladies, I felt that what most historians had written about her was just, it didn't fit. It didn't seem right. And so now with the new information available, for example, we can all do ancestry studies. We can look at the census. I was able to look at and go in and find some court records of her parents' very stressful marriage and some other records of what a very lonely childhood she had. I looked into the mysterious circumstances of her mother's death and came up with a conclusion that fits for me. It might not fit for all readers, but I do believe, yes, that I was able, I think because of what we can now do with internet, I was able to find out things about her childhood that no one had written about before.
I'm glad that you mentioned First Lady's mother, because you write in the book about big difference between President Johnson's mom and the First Lady's mother.
Well, that's certainly true. Lyndon Johnson's mother was unusual, I think, for her time, in that she had gone to Baylor University. She had a college degree from a very respected college, but she hadn't been able to achieve much of her hope. She wanted to write the great Confederate novel, she said, or become a journalist. And instead, she ended up married to a rancher who had good times and bad times, and she had to go with the flow. And she gave birth to 5 children, of course. So in many ways, it was a hard scrabble life that she had. Lady Bird's mother, on the other hand, came from a very well-to-do family, married a man who was definitely not on the same level. As I said, it was a very stressful marriage, and she ended up dying at 44 in these mysterious circumstances. So their backgrounds are extremely different.
Would you care to share with us about the mysterious circumstances? I don't think that's really a spoiler as far as the book goes, but...
Well, most accounts of Lady Bird's mother's death, in fact, no picture of her survives. So even though in the book I have a picture of Lady Bird's father, I couldn't put one of Lady Bird's mother because none apparently survives. And that's kind of mysterious. She was born in 1874. My grandmother was born not too long after that, and I certainly have a picture of her. So most historians write what Lady Bird said, told her own daughters, that her mother was 44 years old, pregnant, and was tripped by a dog and fell down a flight of stairs and died. And that's generally the story repeated by most biographers of Lyndon and also of Lady Bird, who had not managed to find the death certificate. So this was in 1918 when Lady Bird was 5 years old. And I really wanted to follow up on that story. So I went to that little town, Karnak, Texas, which is in Harrison County, right over at the Louisiana border. And I went to the courthouse, and I found the death certificate for Lady Bird's mother. And it said she died of septicemia. Now, septicemia is what we mostly today would say blood poisoning. And at that time, there was 1918, there was no cure for it. Remember, Calvin Coolidge's son died of blood poisoning when he got a blister on the back of his foot playing tennis. So it was a big fear. So I thought, all right, she died of blood poisoning. I guess you could fall down a flight of steps and somehow cut yourself and get infected, or as Calvin Coolidge's son's blister did, and it could lead to death. But I wanted some more information. So I went around. I went to the church where there should have been a funeral. There was no funeral held, according to the records of the church. I thought, well, if she was pregnant, then there should be on her tombstone some mention of a dead-born child. But I went to the tombstone. I found the cemetery where she was buried, and no mention of an unborn child. I learned that Lady Bird's father did not permit her name to be mentioned. All these things, I talked to the granddaughter of the family doctor who had delivered Lady Bird but did not sign the death certificate. So there were so many things that just seemed mysterious, to be buried a day after her death without a funeral. Unless there was some big flu epidemic, that wouldn't happen. And I found out that in Karnak, Texas, in 1918, although much of the rest of the country had a flu epidemic, it didn't hit there. So I remember, I'd taught women's history for about 20 years, and I remembered hearing from some of my students, but also from what I read, that a common cause of death in that period for women who tried to abort using a metal object was blood poisoning. So that that fit in with the rest of what I knew about the death of Lady Bird's mother. She really was not very fond of mothering. She had sent her two older sons away to boarding school, so Lady Bird grew up not knowing them. She had already made plans for her legal name was Claudia, to be sent away to boarding school, even though she was less than 6 years old. So that, plus the fact that the records were missing from the town newspaper, all these things added up to me, and I decided that if I had to bet money on something, of course we can't know without an autopsy, but I would really look into the botched abortion.
We're visiting with Betty Boyd Caroli. She is the author of the book novel. It's not a novel, excuse me. Lady Bird and Lyndon, the hidden story of a marriage that made a president. And perhaps what you just described could be a thriller novel or a mystery novel, the situation surrounding Lady Bird's mom. But this is a historical book, and a lot of research went into this. As you mentioned, that it was difficult, you couldn't find some of the information on Lady Bird's mom. What about doing research for the president's family? And we'll talk a little bit about his mom as well, because it's interesting that when we think of President Johnson, we hear stories about how he was rude. Sometimes, he would grab reporters by the collar of their suits or anything like that. But in your book, you mentioned that at one point that something about referring to him saying, correct me if I'm wrong, that he wanted to be a mama's boy or something like that.
Well, he was his mother's firstborn, and she had great hopes for him. As I said before, she wanted to be a great writer. She had dreams. And here she was reduced to circumstances that weren't to her liking. And so she saw in Lyndon the realization of those hopes and dreams that she had never been able to achieve. And he returned that, I think, a great love and respect for his mother. The chapter, I think, that you're referring to, the one about his youth, is refers to a poem. When he got a chance to recite a poem at his, I think it was first grade, it was a very early grade school, he chose, "I'd rather be mama's boy." So I sort of expanded on that to show that all his life he tried very hard to meet those high expectations that his mother had set.
So some people may wonder, well, then is that the case as far as his wife goes? Because Lady Bird, some would argue that perhaps she acted as his mom, but at the same time, Well, I'll let you answer that because I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Well, one of the reasons I got into writing about presidents' wives, and it was reluctantly because, as I said, I'd been teaching women's history, and I didn't want to write about women who became famous because of the men that they married. And so when my editor encouraged me to find out a little bit more, she said, if you knew more, you'd be more interested in writing about them. So I looked into some of the ones that were obscure, Lucretia Garfield and Sarah Polk and so forth, and I realized that almost all of them, the presidents married up and the women married down. That is, they married into families, the women did, that were considerably less well off, sometimes less education and so forth, and that's certainly true with the Johnsons. Lady Bird came from a wealthy background, grew up in a 17-room mansion with 6 fireplaces. Lyndon's home, 300 miles west of her, the place where he was born, is a low-ceilinged, 4-room cabin, really. So they came from very different backgrounds. And I think it's true. One of the advantages I had in writing this book was that the courtship letters that they wrote in 1934, remember, they met in Austin, Texas, when he was back there from his job in Washington, D.C., where he was working as a congressman's assistant. And he happened to be in the office of a friend in Austin, the same time Lady Bird was. And the woman, who was a friend of both Lady Bird and Lyndon, introduced the two of them. That was on September 5, a Wednesday afternoon in 1934. And he had another date that night, but he was meeting her the next morning for breakfast, and she said he asked her to marry him on that very first date. They spent about 5 days together, and then he went back to Washington because he had to, because of his job, wanted her to come with him to marry him immediately. She declined. She said she felt the electric going, but she also thought he was crazy to want to marry so quickly. So they exchanged letters over the next 8 weeks or so until he went back at Halloween. And in those letters, he definitely spells out what he needs from her. And certainly he talks about her high principles, her ideals, and watching her preside over her father's household, because he spent one day with her father on the trip back, and Lady Bird was hostessing that event. So yes, there's a very clear picture, it seems to me, that he knew he was marrying up. He often teased her. You know, she had 2 degrees from the University of Texas, the first lady to have 2 degrees, and the only first lady to have 2 degrees until Hillary Clinton. And now I think all of them since then have had 2 degrees. But anyway, he would say in his letters, even in the 1934, you can write better than I can. And she could. Her letters are much more elegant and well done than his. So yes, he knew he was marrying up. And she knew, you're going to ask me what she was marrying. She was marrying a man with ambitions to meet her own and to get her where she wanted to go.
I'm glad you mentioned the letters, because that actually was going to be my next question, talk about that. But in the book, you talk about the letters, and some people may wonder, okay, well, you know, what did those letters say, and what was so big about them? Well, the fact that, as you described, that they were very romantic, raw, and brimming with lust.
Well, they are. I mean, there's certainly the youthful energy and attraction expressed in that. But I think even more important, you'd expect that, he was 20. They were both in their 20s anyway. They were young people, and you can expect them separated to express their desire to be together again. But also, what was so important for me was that he showed the traits that we later saw in him as a president, the moodiness. He would say one day, oh, I'm on top of the world. If you marry me, we're going to change the world. You know, he was out for everything. And then the next letter, he was down in the dumps. Nothing was going right. One letter he would say, I want you to marry me tomorrow. And the next letter would say, oh, we have to wait 4 or 5 years. And she remained so steady in those letters, saying, now, Lyndon, stop that right now. You're going to have to get up, put one foot in front of the other, and everything will be all right. And she refused to criticize him. No, if he didn't write, they wrote a lot of letters, but if he missed a day, if she missed a day, he was furious, and he'd say, oh, you don't care about me anymore. You probably don't even open my letters. And he'd write really kind of nasty things. But nothing upset her. She wrote back and said, I'm not going to fuss with you. It would be presumptuous to fuss with someone you love. So we get the relationship that lasted for almost 40 years, and we get it all spelled out in those letters.
We're visiting with Betty Boyd Caroli. She is the author of the book Lady Bird and Lyndon, The Hidden Story of a Marriage That Made a President. And that relationship and love continued throughout the years, because you write in your book that even later, their daughters were, I guess, if you want to use that word, jealous of the admiration and love that she had for Lyndon and not for them.
Well, the daughters said that, I should say first, Lady Bird admitted again and again that she knew that she put her husband ahead of her daughters, and she said, it doesn't give me a guilt complex. She didn't in any way indicate she would change it if she had it to do over again. And the daughters complained. I mean, there would be long periods when their mother had to be with their father campaigning or taking care of business in Texas while they were in school in Washington, or just going out night after night to one political event or another. And Lady Bird said, Lyndon always came first, my daughter second, and me third. The daughter said, Lyndon came first, her broadcasting business came second, and then we came third. In fairness to her, and to Lyndon Johnson, I have to say that other people I interviewed about those years, 1940s and 50s, which is when the Johnson daughters were growing up in Washington, other people talked to me about how politicians typically put family last. I mean, any comment like the one made by Paul Ryan recently, that no matter if he's Speaker of the House of Representatives, he's not going to cut down on family time, that just wasn't the style in Washington in the 1940s and 50s. So I think we can say it was typical for Lady Bird to feel that way, particularly since she did live in Washington and had that long trip back to Texas. It was bound to happen in that day of less fast travel than today, that she would have to be in Texas when the girls were in Washington in school.
Tell us a little bit about, because you mentioned the broadcast business, and I'm not sure if a lot of people know the fact that she owned the station and broadcast station in Austin.
Right. She had a degree, as I said before, in journalism. She stayed an extra year to get that second degree, and she always said that she had wanted to own a newspaper, but that cost more money, and instead, in the winter of 1942-43, after she had spent several months running Lyndon's congressional office while he was away on active duty in the war, he came back, took over the office again, and then she used money that she had inherited, $17,500, from her uncle Claude, whose name she bore. He was Claude, her mother's brother, and she was named Claudia for him, although, of course, as we know, always called Lady Bird. So she took money from that she'd inherited, and she bought a failing radio station in Austin, KTBC. And she went down there. I know some historians write that she was just the front, that really Lyndon was behind every decision made for that station. But I came up with the opposite conclusion, particularly in the early years. She was the one who went over the weekly reports. She went down there for the first 6 months or so and got the station. They said she even washed the windows. Here was a woman who grew up in such privileged circumstances. She had never swept the floor or cooked a meal. But when it came time to do work to get her business going, she went down to Austin while Lyndon was in Washington, and she got the station up and running and went over the weekly reports, as I said, for the next few years, wrote every check except for payroll, was very influential in deciding later in the early 1950s to go into television.
We are visiting with Betty Boyd Caroli, and she is the author of the book Lady Bird and Lyndon. And there have been various books written about President Johnson. Perhaps Robert Carroll. Carroll is perhaps the most famous as far as the book, because he has, what, four volumes, something like that, that follows the career of President Johnson. And in this book, you not only tell us about the president's career, but you also include the partnership, as you mentioned, Lady Bird. And a lot of people, I think you put to rest any perhaps rumors or stories that she was just a sidekick, or the fact that she was a doormat, because she was very much needed by the president. And in some part, I forget the part of the book, but you say in one part that the president would be walking and that all of a sudden he would call Bird and she'd say, "I'm right behind you."
Yes, I think most biographers of Lyndon have been too attentive maybe to the powerful figure that he was. You know, he was tall, he was 6 feet three, he tended to tower over the people around him, and it was easy to see, to think that he was commander of everything going on around him. In the book, I think I show that there were many instances in which she stood up to Lyndon. There's a wonderful telephone conversation, you can hear it online, where she criticizes a speech, a press conference that he gave, and she really lays it out for him. She says, "You know, you're talking too fast here, and you look down too much, and you gave the wrong answer here," and she... Then there's another telephone conversation that is so clear that she disagreed with Lyndon on important things and stood up to him and acted in defiance. The telephone conversation which the two of them argue over what to do when their chief aide, a man who was like a member of the family to them, Walter Jenkins, was arrested in a morals charge in a Washington restroom. It was a few weeks before the most important election of their lives, the November 1964 election, for Lyndon to have a term of his own. And so the president, who'd been in office, 9 months or, well, a little more than that, 10 months, 11 months, was afraid that if word got out that his chief aide had been arrested, it would make him subject to blackmail and he would have to be fired from his job. And Lady Bird understood that he would have to leave that job, but she wanted to give Jenkins the number two position in her broadcasting empire, because by then it was a broadcasting empire. And Lyndon told her to stay out of it. It's not your problem. You can't say anything. And he's in New York at this time. She's in Washington. A plane is waiting for him, and he says, "I've got to go. I can't talk to you." She says, and she keeps him on the line. 13 minutes they're on the line arguing. And then after she hung up, she went ahead and did what he told her not to do. She wrote a statement and had it published in the Washington Post in support of Walter Jenkins, saying that he was under enormous stress, he was working 18-hour days, and the entire country should be praying for him and for his family in this very difficult time. So, yes, I think it was. I think a lot of historians have been misled, concentrating on the power of Lyndon Johnson, and they haven't seen that behind him there was somebody who was extremely important. Lady Bird was so good at getting him out of depressions when he said, oh, I just can't do this, when times got difficult. She was, it seems, the only one who could talk him out of that.
And the two words, I'm sorry for interrupting. We have a couple of minutes here left in the interview, but a couple of words that the First Lady would use a lot and calm the president was, now, Lyndon.
Now, Lyndon, yes. Bill Moyer said, who knows how many great crises were averted, because he would start in on blaming people when things weren't going right. He would start calling people communists. All the networks are run by communists. They name respected historians. He's a communist. And she would say, now, Lyndon, don't you think that maybe? And sometimes that would calm him down and steer him in another direction.
As we're wrapping up, Betty, if you wouldn't mind sharing with us a website for yourself or for your book that features additional materials for people who may be interested in some of this.
Sure. My website is BettyBoydCaroli.com, and it lists some information. But also, I'd urge everybody to go to the LBJLibrary.org. And go in there. You can find links to the courtship letters. You can read all 80 or so of them. You can find a reference to the telephone conversations, which are online, courtesy of the Miller Center. So use that website, lbjlibrary.org, and, as of course, mine, if you want other information about the book, which is available in hardback and in Kindle and in audio. I just listened to part of the audio. It's a very nice reading.
And Betty's last name is spelled with one R. It's C-A-R-O-L-I. We've been visiting with Betty Boyd Caroli. She is the author of the book Lady Bird and Lyndon, The Hidden Story of a Marriage That Made a President. Betty, thank you so much for your time. And gosh, it went by so quickly. And we didn't even get to touch on a lot of other topics that your book addresses. But perhaps this is something that the listeners can find out by reading the book and also going to, as Betty mentioned, the Presidential Library of President Johnson website and also her website, BettyBoydCaroli.com. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
We've been visiting with Betty Boyd Caroli, and Lyndon is the name of the book, and this is The Hidden Story of a Marriage That Made a President.